हरिः ॐ सहनाववतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरिगौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Sutra 43. The rules of these scriptures do not apply to a devotee of the Lord, for an enlightened devotee never acts against the spirit of truth. Okay. Page 65. Mano explains, a person who knows the true meaning of the Vedas and follows the rules of his ashram becomes liberated even as he resides in this world. Because true meaning, you know what the Vedas are actually for, right? For being Krishna conscious. So one will perform his ashram duties. Because the ashram is what is basically, mainly you could say, elevating you. The varna is assistant in that it provides the facility. But you can also connect it, right? So it also become dynamic. But the ashram is where your sadhana and your personal practices are, your personal development, study of the shastras, association with devotees. That's not occupation, that's ashram. It is also said, if someone says, what is the religion of the Vedas? The answer is given. The true religion of the Vedas is the religion taught by great transcendentalists. Right? So Sanatana Dharma, that's the actual Dharma. Because so many dharmas are there. Dharma will define what is the inherent nature of something that, you know, you don't change. In other words, what's the principal nature of something, not the detail of its manifestation. Right? That is Dharma. So everything has Dharma. But the point is the Sanatana Dharma, that's what's eternal. Right? Because the particular item you work with, the rock, it has a Dharma. But it does. Its hardness is there. You know, these things are inherent. But this is also just a manifestation of atoms of earth, right, for this particular situation. So these rocks are created because there's some, you know, in the jiva's idea, then there should be some rocks. So they're manifested. Right, but that nature will go away, and you won't see the rocks. So that rocks are hard. That's eternal, but that's because the Krishna's given him that. That's the law by which he's created them. Right, so that means what is in connection with the Lord? That's Sanatana. Other aspects are temporary. They manifest. They're not manifest. So the stone lasts a little longer, but the grass that doesn't last so long. Right? But it has its dharma. Does that make sense? Yes.
Maharaj, in connection with Manu explains, with the ashram, would it be the attraction and the varna, the retraction, and the process?
Yeah, you could say. But, you know, but seeing the Lord and everything and all that, yeah, you could. It means both go on, and you could say it's more predominantly you're engaging those things that will pull you out. But also in ashram, then you also have the element there of giving up the attachment to attachment or renunciation. Yeah. like that. So it'll be all throughout, but you could if you want to break it that way. You could say your work is definitely, but then for a Brahmin, his occupation is worshipping the deity and all those things. So those wouldn't necessarily be retraction. You know what I'm saying? So you wouldn't necessarily apply that element there. Means you can explain it from there, but you wouldn't use it as a categorization. Right? In other words, the ashram generates the personal development. The varna is what gives you the facilities to do that. You know what I'm saying? So for Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, Shudras, then that creates facility, that work creates a facility which you then can engage. For the Brahman, the engagement itself is the facility. You know? So it's more direct. That's why it's considered better. Right? It is also said, what a great transcendentalist speaks should be known to be the true religion. True religion is not the opinion of fools. Because people will look at things and say that something has its nature, right? But what are they talking? A foolish person, you know, is in line with what we were saying this morning. When he sees something, what is he dealing with? Is he dealing with transcendence? Is he dealing with the mundane? Why is it mundane? Yes, it's the senses. Right?
His perception of it is through his conditioning or level of realization.
Yes. Yeah, in other words, he wants to enjoy. He's looking at the world with the idea that I can enjoy this. So he'll have an opinion based on that. But the transcendentalists, when they look at the world, they don't see something to enjoy. They see opportunities for engagement in the Lord's service. Right? So their vision, their expression, that will be real Dharma. While the other person, even though they're describing things according to Shastra, you know, that we would even call it Dharma, it's not actually the real Dharma. Right? In other words, he's the Brahman, so therefore he does all these different kind of samskaras and other karmas in his day-to-day routine, and you know, that's the real Dharma. No, he's missed the point. He's seen those aspects that give rise to Dharma, Artha, Kama, and Moksha. Right? But the transcendentalist, he sees what gives rise to devotion. Does that make sense? Right? Means the Brahmin, it may be performing his duties that is pious, as according to Shastra, and he's thinking, this will give me Artha, or this will elevate me to the heavenly planets. Right? Or by this I will become renounced and attain to the Brahman. Right? Or it will give me facilities and I can buy food and other facilities. Right? So this element of Dharma, Artha, Kama, and Moksha will come into play. Well, the transcendentalists, they're dealing with Sanatan Dharma, which is beyond Dharma, Artha, Kama, and Moksha. Right? So you have Dharma of this world, which is Dharma, Artha, Kama, Moksha. And you have Sanatan Dharma, which means devotional service. Does that make sense? Yeah, because when we say the eternal nature of the living entity is to serve the Supreme Lord, then that's not obtained on the platform of moksha. Right? On the platform of moksha, one is still within the material consciousness. Right? Consciousness in the way of I'm the controller and I'm the enjoyer. Until that's given up, then one doesn't attain actual liberation. Does that make sense? There are thousands of persons who do not follow vows or chant mantras, or who earn a livelihood as professional mantra chanters or professional Brahmins. These persons have no power to teach what the real religion, the real truth is. Right? So those who don't have vows or chant mantras, and those who make a living out of it, neither of them can explain it to you. So in other words, the sinful people who don't follow any regulation, and the pious people who follow all regulation, neither of them can explain it. Right? It's only what the person transcendentally situated explains, that's actually Dharma. Because that is the real nature of the soul. Other things are Dharma, but it's temporary. You understand? So for us, since everything's in connection to the Lord, so when we talk about Varnasha, we're only talking about Sanatana Dharma. Right? And as we saw from the opening of Manu and this quote here, then that's also what Manu's explaining. Right? But because of the terminology used in that, we attribute this particular transcendental knowledge to Manu. Right? And see the aspects of the mechanics of the world. And so then we will consider that the Dharma Shastra is something other than transcendental knowledge. Right? But what it is it's explaining how to use those things within the purview of material Dharma in relationship to the Sanatana Dharma. That's what's actually being explained. So that's what's being explained, but you have to know Sanatana Dharma to appreciate it. Therefore, it's not called a scripture of Sanatana Dharma. It's not paravidya. It's aparavidya, because it's telling you how to use it in the Lord's service. Does that make sense? So that's what aparavidya is for. If you're explaining the skill itself without its connection to the Lord, that's called avidya. Right? So then you always have to be very careful. Is the seminar on developing various skills, is it avidya or is it aparavidya? Right? Or is it transcendence? Yes.
So Ishupanishad will be paravidya?
Yes, Ishupanishad will be paravidya. Bhagavatam is paravidya.
Which one of our scriptures will be aparavidya? The one that we are learning?
It means of ours what we'll learn. Means we will, it means the Bhakti Anuchana, that will be aparavidya. That's after next year's course.
Yeah,
well, there is that element there, you know. Just a matter of how means the idea is that after the third year, then we should be able to know the philosophy well enough that we can go through these scriptures quite quickly. That's the idea, because otherwise, if we have to hash things out at that time, they can get really. I mean, if we're dealing with direct transcendental literature and we're getting so caught up with our mundane attachments and fighting for them and like that, what are we going to do when we deal with the scriptures that deal directly with our mundane attachments? You know, see, oh, I knew it. You know, so does that make sense? Because the idea is that in trying to discern, we're very clear what is transcendental and what's not. When we're dealing with Dharma, what is transcendental, what's not. We're dealing with Ayurveda, what's transcendental, what's not. Right, Nyaya, what's transcendental, what's not. All these things, because that's what people get distracted by. Right? Like that. People are going out their job, making money. That's Arthashastra. Right? Very few are clever, so hardly any use Niti. Right? And also probably even less use Dharma. You know, so we can't even discern what's there. We're doing our activity, well, it's my Dharma. But it only becomes your Dharma if you see it according to the scriptures. It may be your Dharma, but you don't get the credit unless you understand the connection. Right? Does that make sense? The person's in the house and walking around the house and just doing their own thing. Now, they happen to be someone's child, right? And the parent is in the house. But do they get credit for being the child themselves, unless they recognize their position as the child, right? They walk around, come in, open the fridge, take things out, go look at here and there what they can find, you know, then go out and sit down and tell me, you know, like this. But where are they getting the credit for being the child? right? When they recognize the position of the parent in their relationship, then that's it. The parent always sees them as the child. So that's not going to go away. But you don't get the credit for it unless you recognize it. Does that make sense? So all these activities and literatures are meant for transcendental activities, but you only get credit when you see them that way. Right? The direct activities, of course, that's not the problem. But generally, most problems aren't, at least for us, aren't coming from, you know, the our attachment for the holy name. That's not the driving force behind all our difficulties in Krishna consciousness, right? It's our attachment for anything else other than the holy name that generally is our difficulty. Does that make sense? So the idea is to be able to go through that quickly. Originally we were discussing it, putting it next year, but then seeing how much things get drawn out, just like things that we're discussing now, if we had discussed them last year, would have taken a long time. Right? Now they're coming much easier because of knowing, understanding the philosophy. So the idea is next year we would finish all the philosophical elements that we are discussing, you know, in the Shastra Chakshus level. Right? It means all the points and everything like that. Then if we look at the Bhakti Anuchana, then we'll actually be able to see it as Bhakti Anuchana. Because the term comes from a quality of Narad Muni, who sees all literatures in connection with devotional service. Sees all topics, all situations. There's no topic he has any problem discussing, because he sees any topic in relationship to the Lord. Does that make sense? Like, we'll have topics that we'll have a problem with. You know what I'm saying? Like Prabhupada, he can sit there and, you know, talk philosophy, but he can also tell this joke, which is all about passing stool. You know, and we're kind of like, you know, but he has no problem. Why? Because he's not seeing it as a position of enjoyment or not, as a position of social elements or not. Does that make sense? So there's not a problem. Like if we were describing all the different persons who were there, who came to meet Krishna, right, at Dwarka, who would we mention? Sudama. Narad. Right? I mean, when Krishna comes to Dwarka, who comes out to meet him?
All the ladies.
Okay, all the ladies, they come out. They're on the roof. Yeah, the ladies are on the roof.
The society girls.
Like that. That's the ones that come out. He was just saying it in a subtle way. If you were more direct about it. You know what I'm saying? So they're coming out. So that's generally something someone doesn't talk about. You know, the great personalities, the great Brahmins, the other Kshatriyas that are there, the common citizens. You know, that'll be mentioned. But you see in the Bhagavatam, wherever he comes to Mathura, he comes to Dwarka, they're always mentioned. They're always part of it. Right, because they don't have problem, because they're one of the ones that came. They're their own group. So it's pointing out that everybody is attracted to Krishna. Does that make sense? Yeah. Does that make sense? So the idea is then we do it after that, then hopefully that will go a lot more smoothly, and then, you know, sticking to going through a whole literature in, you know, a week or two will be possible. Otherwise we'll get so distracted by, you understand? Because it'll be a functional, right? How to work with that shastra in connection with the philosophy, right? It's not for understanding the skills of application, right? You're not going to discuss Ayurveda for a week or two and know how to apply it, right? Not as a skill. That takes many years. But to study it and understand the philosophy of it, then you'd be able to actually even discuss with an Ayurvedic doctor about Ayurveda, and that side you may know more than him. Right? So you'd be able to discuss with an Ayurvedic doctor on Ayurveda and discuss philosophy. Right? The idea is that you have something that you can talk with anybody on. because you know its connection to the Lord, right? So that's the idea of the Bhakti Moksha. Does that make sense? So that answers the question. So there'll be plenty of that. And then after that, then that's it. After that, then we're only dealing with transcendental literatures. Up to now, it's only been transcendental, and after that, it will be transcendental.
So you mentioned about Narada Muni. Is it why he's considered the master person like Ramana? Because he can relate everything to the ocean?
Yeah, you could say. You know, he's a master in all, because he knows that. Because that's what the master, generally, at least in the Vedic, that's what the master knows that the others don't know. The expert knows the science itself very exactly. But the master knows what's beyond that. You know, what its principles are and how its connection, and what its connection to the Lord is. So, what we're going to discuss is just the principles and its connection to the Lord. Does that make sense? Yes. So, you know, even if we're discussing the subject matter, but that will be what we'll discuss. So at that time we'll have to be very strict that no side questions. Otherwise, that's the ocean of Vedic literature that is being discussed, that's being mentioned. Okay. Therefore, when a self-realized devotee ordains any new arrangements, they should be accepted as religious injunction, even if they are not found in the scriptural dictum of the previous sages. Right? Because the principle that the previous sages are mentioning, they're establishing. So when they say Prabhupada establishes new things, they're not actually looking at the principle. They're not actually looking at the eternal religious element. They're just looking at the external and then using that to say that therefore my mundane perception is okay. You understand? You have to be very careful of that. Right? Yes.
This is the same principle as we discussed yesterday, that we should approach any scripture with the outlook of the ultimate consistency.
Yes.
We should approach the devotees who are the source of that.
Yes. So we means the scripture has a meaning because it means the person who is the authors are expressing the transcendence through the medium of that topic. So to understand their position, you have to approach them through our acharya. Right? You always approach previous acharyas through one's own acharya. So therefore, with that proper transcendental view, then looking, you actually understand what they're talking about. And at the same time, if you need to know the mundane knowledge, you know, the mundane skill, you can get that also. You know what I'm saying? So there's all these subtle things. We'll say so many things, but it's straight philosophy. Did we discuss about the gross and subtle body yesterday? Day before yesterday. No? Okay, so in Bhagavata, second canto, then it's mentioning the subtle body is made out of earth, water, and ether. Or the gross body is made out of earth, water, and fire. Right? So the main common element there is the water. Right? So that's what gives the life to everything. So that's why water is so important for the gross body, you know, bathing in that, the subtle body, Atman, and these things, the purity of that determines these other elements. But it's also the element of rasa. So also the relationships, everything like this. So it's very important, right? Does that make sense? So then, understanding that, then you can see that if the water is pure, the lifestyle will be of good quality. Right? But that's a philosophical point. But you apply that into medicine. Right? You understand? So that's the point, is it always comes down. The philosophy is always what the mundane mechanics are working on. They're not working on something else yet. Yes. Yeah. All the different things. Yeah. So because it's all there. Because the taste happens from rasa. from water. There's no water, you can't taste anything. So all the six tastes and all the six tastes are what manage the balance in the body. In a sense, so it all... Does that make sense? So that's the idea, is you understand that and that connection. Then the rest of it becomes very easy to understand if there's an inclination. Otherwise, people have great, good memories, right? And the pious qualities of, you know, forbearance and tolerance and humility, all these different things, that they're able to keep going at this dry, boring subject until such time as they can utilize it. Right? But it doesn't mean they actually understand the subject. You can say, no, but he's the greatest, you know, Ayurvedic doctor, he can cure anybody, but it doesn't mean he actually understands what Ayurveda is for, because he can only cure the body. He can't cure the soul. Now, Murari Gupta, he's a real doctor. Some button to push and it goes off. Does that make sense? So that's in 2 years. Yes.
Bhagavatam would be pushed by 1 year?
Basically. Well, the thing is it's just a matter of... This is the problem. So you have the element of those first books, Bhagavad Gita, Ishvapanishad, Nectar Devotion, Upadeshamrita, just their study itself only. Then Prabhupada attributes basically a high school level, you know, it means, in other words, a secondary educational degree to them. Right? We're approaching the study of these literatures, along with his other books and the works of the Acharyas, from a tertiary level. Does that make sense? It means a university level, right? So then, from there, then doctorate is obtained at the Bhaktivedanta, the third level. And then you have to have a higher doctorate to do Chaitanya Charitamrita. You know what I'm saying? Because Prabhupada's comparing it just to the American system, but we don't feel the American system does justice to the subject matter. Right? You know, so your older European systems do better at that. You know, so it's things that they'll accept. So the difficulty comes, is the first year actually, I mean, technically, because you're adults, you're learning it as tertiary education, but is it actually the tertiary subject? Does that make sense? So, is it that in itself, then it's there, and then with 3 years, and then that way you get 12? Or is that before that, and you require that to attend the tertiary education? So it's still, tertiary is still 12. Like that. Or do we take it that it's just tertiary, and then the Chaitanya Charitamrita, well, actually, because you have the quaternary, which means what's beyond tertiary. So is that then outside of the 12? Or is that within it? So that's the difficulty, because if you really get into it, the volume of stuff is so nice that there's so many things. Does that make sense? In other words, what we did in the first year, the kids do that in their secondary. Right? That's the same subject matter. They're saying, but they don't necessarily have the philosophical maturity, but the cultural aspects will go quicker. You know, while the adults, then they have more philosophical understanding, but not necessarily as much cultural thing. So it basically works out. You know, either side, it takes a year to go through. Does that make sense? Yes.
How we should approach other shastras like Vimbarkacharya explains from Veda, Veda?
It's not so important, but we'll deal with that next year. But the point is that it's just to know what are the different approaches that are the acharyas are using, because all those elements are within Chintaveda Veda Tattva. So the technical mechanic of it works, but the point is that you can also run it alongside other things which they are not presenting. Does that make sense? You know, just like you're saying, Nyaya, that is Gotama's philosophy, but it's also just a subject matter of the Vedas. Right? But he's taken Nyaya as a philosophy as opposed to just logical discussion. Does that make sense? Interesting in that Kali Santaran Upanishad, where it gives the Maha Mantra, it uses the same tune. That's the Vedic tune for the Hare Krishna Mantra. Okay, so now the following sutra resolves an old controversy. Bhaktau navarnashrama vidhi na tasya jnana paratva. The spontaneous devotees are free from the bindings of various social orders and distinctions due to their acquisition of divine knowledge. Summary of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's commentary.
I think you have experience of that being the old controversy a lot in this club.
Yes, because either, you know, yeah. There's also the point is here's what we say spontaneous, because there's the awakening, you could say, of spontaneity, but there's not. It's just like when it's dark, okay? And when it starts to get light, what do we call that time? Yeah, dawn, twilight, or sunrise. But is it actually sunrise? No. When the sun actually rises, then it's sunrise. But before it rises, there's light. So also the spontaneous aspect may have its shedding of light upon the practices of the devotee, you know, the Madhyama devotee. But it's still, when it's talking on this level, then you have the aspect of it means, therefore, bhava. That's when the sun rises. Yes. You understand? But so that means is that to say that it's only that is wrong, and to say that the other one is fully spontaneous devotional service is wrong. No. The Bhava Bhakti, that's the full manifestation of, I mean, not even full, that's where it gets serious. Prema is fully spontaneous, but there is that you can say now it's solid. You know, it's the nishta of pure devotion, you could say, okay? But it doesn't mean that it's the brilliant rays of it don't come down and illuminate one's enthusiasm to take part in the devotional process before. Otherwise, how is their taste? Because that means there's some spontaneity. You like chanting, or you're attached to chanting. So these are all elements of the spontaneous aspect. Does that make sense?
There's a verse of Bhaktivinoda Thakur where he says that until the platform of liberation, one should remain within the constraint of the varnashram grounds.
Yes. So one thought, but it doesn't. But that's why it's said that it's hidden. Right? It means, because just look at it this way: unless you're going for shakya ras or parental ras or servitorship like that, then it's going to have to be hidden anyway. Can the gopis who have a conjugal relationship with Krishna and Vrindavan, can they show it? It's always hidden. So get used to it. Right? So if we show it off here, what are you going to do there? You know what I'm saying? They don't show it off, so therefore it's not a sign of advancement. The sign of advancement is who's going to be more advanced. The one who there's an assembly of devotees there, and something, Krishna comes or something, or someone mentions something, and there's this little noticeable, you know, effect. You know, some sanctuary bhava is seen there. Or that person who acts as if nothing was said, and so no one gets any idea that they have a conjugal relation with Krishna. Well, the other one might have a doubt, but no, but they're married, so enough, and they, I've never seen, so it won't be. Which, who would be better? Right? The one who nothing shows. Does that make sense? So that's the point. That's the practice anyway. That's why the example is given of the wife with the parama. Right? Because if anything shows, she's in trouble. So nothing shows. To that degree that nothing shows, to that degree it's... In fact, you even do the other aspects more nicely. So in other words, the person on the level of spontaneous, he'll be able to follow Varnashram better than the Varnashramites. And not only that, they understand the real purpose, so it's actually Sanatana Dharma. You know, why be expert in material Varnashram? Right? So when we say Daiva, we means it's connected to the Lord. And when we say Asuric, it means it's not connected to the Lord. Those are the two kinds of Varnashram. You know, to be politically correct, we'll say Daiva Varnashram and ordinary Varnashram. The ordinary Varnashram is known as Asuric, means it's not connected to the Lord. So the very pious person is practicing Asuric Varnashram. It's not that you have to be a demon with big fangs and all that and horns in your head. Then that's Asuric Varnashram. No, it's that the demigods are following Varnashram in connection with the Lord, but being neophytes, they regularly forget that. So they have to be regularly reminded. Right? But the difference is when things start falling apart, they do remember the Lord. That's what makes them sura. Well, the asura means that when things fall, they don't remember the Lord. They just think, oh, well, another technique to get rid of the problem. Does that make sense? So that's the... So it's that simple. So Daiva Varnashram means it's all in connection with the Lord. That is Sanatana Dharma. You'll see Prabhupada uses the word Sanatana Dharma and Varnashram Dharma interchangeably. Okay. Summary of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's commentary. Are the devotees of the Lord obliged to follow the rules of Varnashram Dharma? Or are they not obliged to follow them? The author writes this sutra to answer this question. He says, in devotional service, the rules of Varnashram Dharma no longer apply. Neophyte materialistic devotees should follow Varnashram Dharma, but advanced devotees who are situated on the spiritual platform are free from the grip of the modes of material nature, have no use for Varnashram Dharma. Right? This pure devotional service is described by the Lords in these words, Bhagavad Gita 7.19 and 7.17. He who is actually in knowledge surrenders unto me. Of these, the wise one who is in full knowledge and union with me through pure devotion, devotional service is the best. In Srimad Bhagavatam 11.18.28, the Supreme Personality of Godhead declares, a learned transcendentalist dedicated to the cultivation of knowledge, and thus detached from external objects, or my devotee who is detached even from the desire for liberation, both neglect those duties based on external rituals or paraphernalia. Thus their conduct is beyond the range of rules and regulations. In Bhagavad Gita 18.66, the Supreme Personality of Godhead declares, abandon all varieties of religion and just surrender unto me. I shall deliver you from all sinful reaction, do not fear. In his purport to Mantra 2, Srila Prabhupada confirms that, on the other hand, the neophytes are obliged to follow the Vedic rules and regulations. The instructions of Sri Yasho Upanishad are more elaborately explained in the Bhagavad Gita, sometimes called the Gita Upanishad, the cream of all the Upanishads. In the Bhagavad Gita 3:19-16, the Personality of Godhead says that one cannot attain the state of Naishkarmya, or Akarma, without executing the prescribed duties mentioned in the Vedic literature. right? Because night means you come to the platform naishkarli by properly performing your duties. By proper forms of duties, then that knowledge and detachment come. But that basically means that's in connection with devotion. Right? Because otherwise, maybe you'll get some external knowledge and detachment. So, but it's not actually very deep. Right? So one learns how to become detached so he can perform his rituals properly. Let's say his fasting or other kinds of austerities. But that's so that he can enjoy later. Right? And the ritual is there so that it'll go nicely. He's inspired to do that because that will then give him his fruit of results. Right? So it's not actually renunciation. Right? It's not actual knowledge. It's simply knowledge in fruit of activities. But in devotional service, then that will give the proper knowledge and detachment by which you can perform your activities and not be distracted. Right? That makes sense. This literature can regulate the working energy of a human being in such a way that he can gradually realize the authority of the Supreme Being. When he realizes the authority of the personality of Godhead, Vasudeva, Krishna, it is to be understood that he has attained the stage of positive knowledge. In this purified state, the modes of nature, namely goodness, passion, and ignorance, cannot act, and he is able to work on the basis of naishkarmya. Such work does not bind one to the cycle of birth and death. Right? So, one can say, well, what happens if someone's, it's mixed? So that's the point, is that how much it's on the one, then that applies, and how much it's on the other. It's not how much there is the being under the modes of nature is how much one has to follow varnashram. And how much one is not under the modes of nature, that's how much you don't. Does that make sense? So what is under the modes, that follows varnashram. What's not, that you don't worry about. Right, you know, it's just like, you know, if you have an injury on one part of your body, you only have to put the medicine there. You don't have to put it everywhere. Right? Does that make sense? So the point is that element of varnashram applies to where the problem is, where the attachment is. Does that make sense? Manu explains. A Brahmin should 1. Study, 2. Teach, 3. Worship the Lord, 4. Convince others to worship the Lord, 5. Give charity, and 6. Accept charity. That's a very nice translation. Because we patana patana yajana yaj, you know, study, teach, worship the Lord, do worship for others, because we're looking at it from an occupation. But the real occupation is to convince the others to do it. Right? The Kshatriya should 1. Protect the citizens, 2. Give charity, 3. Worship the Lord, 4. Study scripture, and 5. Not become attached to material sense objects. Right? So first is protect the citizens. That's the thing. So for the Brahmin, studying and teaching is the main thing. Right? So give charity, because he'll have facility from protecting the citizens. His tax will come and everything else. So he'll give in charity. Right, worship the Lord. So in his own personal life, he must worship the Lord. Because for the Brahmin, his ashram and his varna basically are non-different. Right? Study the scripture. Then he must do that to get a proper understanding. And not become attached to material sense objects, because he has plenty of them. Because from protecting the citizens, then he has lots of facility. Right, so he gives in charity, and what's left he doesn't get attached to, or because he's not attached to, therefore he can study, or therefore he can give in charity and worship the Lord. Right? Otherwise, there's that much facility, he might easily forget the other aspects. Right, which is common. Right, if you look at your basically your non-Vedic kings, these are much of the time your problem. They don't protect the citizens, they don't give in charity, they don't worship the Lord, they don't study scripture, and they are attached to material sense gratification, right? Basically sums it up. Right? That's why they had to create the Magna Carta, right? Because of this, then they weren't taking care of anybody. Right? A Vaishya should 1. Protect cows, 2. Give charity, 3. Worship the Lord, 4. Study scripture, 5. Engage in banking and commerce, and 6. Engage in farming. A Shudra has only one duty. Without envy, he should faithfully serve the other Varnas. Right? It says without envy. It doesn't just say serve. It says without envy. So the people would prosper. The Supreme Personality of Godhead created the different Varnas, created the Brahmins from his head, the Kshatriyas from his arms, the Vaishyas from his thighs, and the Shudras from his feet. Right? This is also things he's taking these all from different places so that you see it all at once. Because so everything would prosper. He created the Varnashram system, right? Because when he created cows, he created Vaishyas, because Vaishyas will take care of them. When he created citizens, then he creates a king. But when he creates human beings, he creates Varnashram, right? And then the Brahmins are the head of that to see that it's taken care of, because the Brahmins will study and teach. So because you see, everybody else has to study but not teach. Right, so study, teach. So study everyone does, worship the Lord everyone does, and give in charity everyone does. So those three are common to the others. Right? But the Kshatriya on top of that protects the citizens and doesn't become attached to material sense objects. And the Vaishya, then after worshiping the Lord and studying scripture, he protects cows, engages in banking, and engages in farming. I mean banking and commerce. In Bhagavad Gita 18:41-44, the Supreme Personality of Godhead explains, Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Shudras are distinguished by their qualities of work, O chastiser of the enemy, in accordance with the modes of nature. Right? So it's the modes that will define it. Right? So you can see, so the Brahman may be there in the temple in front of the deities singing for the deities, but it doesn't make him a Shudra because now he's a musician. Because the Shudra is doing it in the mode of ignorance, for his own recognition and to express his own feelings and all these kind of great things, right? But the Brahmin's there to please the Lord, so it's simply part of the deity worship. You understand? So you can tell by the modes, right? The quality of work being done without ego and all that, and without with desire for fruit or result, right? That makes sense? So by the modes, yes.
Srila Prabhupada wanted to create the class of Brahmins, describing the nature of the conditions.
Means here's class of Brahmins, because see in what we're studying here, because he's defining the because it's necessary. Enough has been said on connecting things to the Lord, one's conditioned nature and all that. So that you can go on and on and on forever, you know, because unless one catches the point, one will think, okay, this is specific detail, I apply that in this situation, but now I'm in this situation, now what do I apply? Right? So in other words, you can go on and on. Does that make sense? But if you're looking at it from the actual definition, it simply means being able to see everything in connection to the Lord, either the direct aspect or the indirect. Right? Does that make sense? So it's not that big of an explanation. But now, so we can distinguish pure unalloyed devotion from the engagement of the material elements due to our own conditioning, right? Then this is being defined. Right? Then, got so much into making exactly defining that I forgot the question now. Okay, yes, the class of Brahman. So, but at the same time, all of these points and all of these quotes, you can take it and apply it all the way down to a devotee that will be below the Uttama level. Right? Because if their determination is to please Krishna, then technically they're beyond the rules. But it doesn't mean they're beyond the rules given to them by their spiritual master. It means beyond the rules that would be expected from a general member of the Vedic society. Like we don't have to do the Shraddha rites and all the other things like that. As I mentioned, is you know what we do is like it's very simple, right? You do a kirtan, there's some prasad, some discussion about the philosophy about, you know, birth, death, old age, and disease, and Haribol, like that. But the other is so exacting, and you have to have such qualified people that anything goes wrong and it's completely messed up. You know, worship of the all the different, the Vaishnava. I can't remember, but it's a very major thing that other sampradayas do, the grihasthas. You cook your rice, that has to be offered to the Lord and offered to everything in the house that has any connection with all the different potencies that are there in the house. So it's not that you can just cook it and do the quick, in the kitchen, little offering and then sit down and eat. You got to pick up that pot of rice and walk around. There's all kinds of places. It's like 20, 30 places, inside, outside. You have to have fed the called guests and fed them. You have to have, fed, other people. You had to have fed the animals. Everything has to be fed. You don't do that, and it's a problem. So those kind of things aren't incumbent on the devotee. You understand? But those rules and regulations that the spiritual master imposes, that is not that we say, oh, we're beyond these rules. No, you're not. Because then beyond those rules means you're beyond the spiritual master, because that's also a rule. And so then it doesn't work. Does that make sense? So if one understands Brahman, that's a Brahmana. And of Brahmanas, then one who understands Krishna, he's the highest. So that means any devotee understands Krishna. So technically, that way, by realization, they're Brahmins, but not necessarily by occupation. You know what I'm saying? But, so, let's say you have the Grihastha, and he's a businessman. Right? So he has, every Wednesday night, he has a program at his house where he invites, he has his regulars, and then a few people that he meets in his, natural, profession. Right? So, but that's not his occupation as a Grihastha Vaishya, right? That's his ashram, right? Because it's part of his sadhana. Does that make sense? So, as a Brahmin, by realization, therefore he can study and teach, right? He's worshipping the Lord and he can convince others, right? Does that make sense? And they may give donations to him that he'll accept on behalf of the temple or some spiritual project. Does that make sense? But as an occupation, he can't do that. Because he wouldn't be satisfied unless he's having that program in his nice 4-bedroom house. You know what I'm saying? And he can only accept that money, give it to the temple, because he has plenty of money. You understand? Otherwise, then he can turn that into a business, which then it won't work. You understand? Well, for the Brahmin, he studies and teaches, and then whatever comes, that's what comes. It's not a monetary element. Does that make sense? But the Vaishya, you only invest a certain amount because you're going to get a certain return. Does that make sense? So that's why occupationally he can't do it. But ashram-wise he can, because it's by ashram that he's a Brahmin. Not occupation. Occupation, he's a Vaishya up front, right there. Nothing else. Does that make sense? So this is the where these subtle overlaps are. So if one understands, one can see these things. That's why he gives a great class, leads a nice kirtan and all that, but that wouldn't be his occupation. One, he wouldn't be satisfied. Right? Does that make sense? Because if everyone is so sad, why are they not? It means, why did they have to move out of the temple? Right? Some circumstances were such, whatever, it had to. You know what I'm saying? Because the problem is when you have the Vaishyas and Shudras in the temple, which, as long as they're acting on the transcendental platform, within the ashram, it doesn't matter. Anyone can be in the temple and act in that way and do all the activities. But as soon as they start looking at it from Dharma, Artha, Kama, and Moksha, then there's a problem. So then if you have the So they'll want more facilities. Temple can't give that, so you have to get it yourself. But then if the Brahmins stay in the temple, then they'll say, well, how come he can stay and I can't? And you can't explain to them the difference. No, but I was giving class, and they can't see because of ignorance, compassion. So then you also had persons who were, by nature, Brahmins, who would have stayed in the temple, would have to move out of the temple just because the Vaishyas and Shudras don't have enough brain or culture. Does that make sense? So you also have that. So that's what I'm saying. It's not that everybody who moved out was always... You know. Does that make sense? So otherwise, why not? Why wouldn't they be? You know what I'm saying? Unless there's some other managerial or philosophical difference. And that's another... But you know what I'm saying? But for many, it's just the move to get more material facility. So they should do that, but connect that to the Lord. But... as they can, work in all these brahminical activities into their life. Because as Vaishnavas, they're automatically brahminical by culture. You know what I'm saying? There, in the Vedic system, there is only one culture, it's brahminical. But now whether you can appreciate it from the brahminical platform or not, that's another thing. You may be practicing the brahminical culture, but from the Vaishnava viewpoint. Does that make sense? So the idea is, but the Vaishnav sees it from the devotional viewpoint. So it's automatically Brahman. So that class has to be made. Now if you have those who are brahminical in Varna and Ashram, great, because they'll be, well, that's all they'll do. But even if not, then those who are in the other Varnas, but because they're on Ashram, they're seeing it in relationship to the Lord. Therefore, they will do also great things in pushing on the movement because they will do these same duties. Does that make sense? Okay. Yes.
Why do we always reemphasize this point? I mean, what is it?
Why do we have to reemphasize? Because we always forget.
What is the key misgiving or key misapplication of this?
Prestige, position, power, authority, facility. Did I miss anything? Etc. etc. Is anything else? You know what I'm saying? Because it means, is there a problem? It means we've defined grihastha as someone who's married and living with his family, right? And brahmacharya is someone who is not, and they're living under the authority of, you know, the temple or sannyasis or someone else in the, that kind of renounced element, right? So do we have any problem with people identifying themselves as grihasthas or brahmacharis, right? Maybe a few bachelors have a little problem, they can't quite figure it out, but it's not really a problem, right? Even the bachelor, there's the idea if he finds the right person, then, right? So, but why not? Is there much prestige connected with it? Not necessarily. Or, the grihastha is in a better position. So it's more prestigious. Huh? No, that's another thing. Is in the Vedic system, it means Vedically a grihastha is senior to a brahmachari, right? Unless it's a advanced, mature brahmachari, then it's seen, then he's in this position of sadhu, so that's there. But brahmachari, in ashram, he's the feet, right? The grihasthas are the waist, the vanaprastha is the arms, the sannyasi, the head, right? So, but... you know, before, when renunciation was the main thing, then there would be brahmacharis who needed to get married, wouldn't get married. Why not? Because of prestige. Right? But now that it's okay to be married, in fact, it's a good position. In fact, they'll say that's a better position than all the other guys are just, how you say, not honest and not straightforward. Then being grihastha is fine. Right? So there's no big deal, right? Isn't it? Okay. Can you apply that to Varna?
Not yet.
Not yet. Why? Because it's all prestige. You're the Brahmin, you're the head, but at the same time, if you're the head, but you don't have the power and the money and all that, so the Kshatriya is better and all that. You know, so he has the power and he takes that, but he doesn't actually generate the money, so he's dependent on the Vaishya. So the Vaishya is, you know, actually better. So if you have a Vaishya who was, a manager, now you're talking. You know, Shudra is nobody's a Shudra, right? Because we're all beyond this body. We're not this body, Prabhu, and all that. Right? But if we're not the body, why are we Grihasthas or Brahmacharis? Or why are we managers? We're not the body, Prabhu. Your body's the manager. You're not the manager. You know. Does that make sense? You know, like that. So it's just a matter of that. That's why it's a problem. Otherwise, it's really easy to figure out. Right? It's basically like this. Do you make your money by, like, teaching or medicine or, you know, arguing law, not by sitting on the side and typing, or, you know, something like that, you know, or the bailiff or something. Or judging, right, adjudicating, or are you a priest, right, or are you an administrator who actually, you know, on the government level, right? And I don't mean, you know, the Kshatriya because he's fired up and passionate and likes to punch people in the head, so therefore he's a Kshatriya. No. We're talking, Kshatriya means government. It doesn't mean management. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Or do you have your own business? Or you're in partnership in a business? In other words, you're the one who is your plans or with others generates the money. Right? Right, either through business, banking, cows, or land. But I don't mean you go out and you grow a few vegetables and you eat lunch. I'm talking about you make money. You buy your house with those because of those vegetables. Right? Okay? So, or are you not any of those three? That's category four. Yes. Yeah, it's not Varna. Varna becomes, you could say, spiritualized because of seeing it in connection with the Lord. So in this way, you apply your understanding from ashram onto the Varna. And this way, then, all aspects of your life are connected to Krishna. So you could say, therefore, he's a Brahmin. But by occupation, he's going to do what his natural condition skill is. Does that make sense? But if he gives that up and just preaches them, then that's fine. Yes.
And if he generates money, give them the preaching.
The preaching, but is that money for himself or is it for the preaching?
To expend.
To expend, but how to expend? Dior just came out with a new fragrance.
Also.
And this bottle will be used for
attracting people.
I see. Okay. Huh? Spray on the Harinam, yeah, like that. Then they'll think, wow, nice guys, but real idiots. I wouldn't spray stuff on you. Nice as like that. The point is okay, that could work. You know what I'm saying? In other words, the prominence is that it means, is it a necessity? You know what I'm saying? Can one not function in one's conditioned state without that facility? But how is that defined? Means, how would you define the necessity? Well, you can't function without, but I'm saying the guy can't function without his cigarettes either. You know what I'm saying? So, but is his smoking cigarettes, is that is that dharma, is it his inherent nature. I mean, if you define him as a malecha, yes, but if you, or a yama like that, but if you define him as you know, functioning in the Vedic system, then no. Right? So what remains? You know what I'm saying? So then what remains is, in this case, in this specific, you know, detail of discussion, would be the feminine nature. Can the feminine nature exist properly without, you know, some nicety in clothes and fragrances and other things like this, nice food and nice situations?
Not so.
Hardly. Right. So, therefore, then it would be counted in as a necessity. Right? But if we're taking it, as you said, as brahminical, how much necessity does a Brahmin girl have as compared to a Kshatriya, Vaishya, or Shudra? Less. You understand? So it has to be brought into what's just workable. In other words, the Kshatriya, the Vaishya, as they please, they're buying. They have 30 different fragrances and they don't use any of them because they can't even remember what they smell like, but whatever. You know, but like that. The Shudra would love to have 30 of them, but only has one or two, and so they use that. But they would have more if they could. But the Brahmin girl, she can get by with two. Of course, she'd like 10, but if she could get by with two, then she'd only have two. You understand? And it has to be in proportion to what else is coming in. You know what I'm saying? If there's not enough things for the deities and this and that, you don't go by buying perfume. There's plenty of this and that, and there's something you can buy your perfume. You understand? So you have to judge the whole thing. Then it becomes, that's why he's saying the modes. You can tell by the modes. So if it's from goodness, understanding the nature of the feminine nature, therefore it's here, and therefore, you know, I may want more, but I don't need more. So you're using the knowledge, so then you balance it and make it work. Does that make sense? But if it's just, I have to have that, that's passion and ignorance. So that's the modes. It's not, you're not working. Then passion, ignorance. So then it's like, do you have the facility? Are you in control? You know, is it like you're generating lots of money? So then you do that. But it's not coming from the preaching. You know what I'm saying? Or you, through economics, you're generating it. You know, so through protection or economics, you generate it. Then you feel like you have to have it, buy it. It's not against your nature. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So one has to use intelligence. It's not just... So that's what we're trying to develop, is that discretion to be able to see the difference in the things, how it works, right? And so, does that make sense? So that will be how we will approach these topics when we get to them. You know what I'm saying? Okay. Yeah. Worked? Yes?
Yes, not merely means of generating the money. I mean, if you teach and you generate the money, it would be kind of a brahminical occupation. But if you read it and use it for compassion and ignorance, then...
Well, it means that you're not very developed in your ashram. Right? In other words, you may be getting your money through brahminical activities, but how you use your money then, because that's all these things, that's why they're studied one at a time. Right? There's the overall principle that everything's connected to the Lord. There's techniques of how to connect it to the Lord. But when you study varna on its own. When you study ashram on its own. Right? There's a connection because of the brahminical element. Because for the Brahman, the varna and the ashram are connected. So therefore, you can bring that across and your varna can be influenced by the elevated consciousness that's there in from the ashram. Does that make sense? But it doesn't necessarily mean that it is there. Generally, you would expect to see it. That someone who is brahminical by varna will also be brahminical in their ashram, so they'll be more reserved. But you do have cases where they're not. So you have to apply it where it applies. So then you say he's impure. You know, like Ashwatthama, he is a Brahmin. But there's some impurities there that are a problem that he has to work out. You know, not that, oh, because something went wrong in ashram, now he's not a Brahmin. No, Brahmin is it. You know, he knows the things, he can do that. The guy does puja all day, he's been doing it for the last 15 years. Then he does something wrong. Does that mean now he's not a Brahmin? No, he still is a Brahmin by occupation. But there's some weakness in the ashram. That's not ideally Brahminical, but it has to be worked out. So we can't tell the difference between the two, and so we use it however we please. So we can't tell the difference. Is there something in Varna that I shouldn't be doing because I don't have the right mentality? So I'll quote the verses, you know, going back the other way to the Brahminical, that no, we're all Brahmins, so we can do anything. We're not the Bhadi Prabhu, this, that, blah, right? Or then it's the other way. Then if something's gone wrong in ashram, then we'll say, oh, well, then we're never a Brahmin. You know, so it's purely political, you know, like that. Mundane morality, all these kind of things. It's not dharma, because dharma defines, you know, the position. Because if prayaschitta is there because you've done something wrong within your nature, not that because of that you're not that nature anymore. Does that make sense? One may argue that there are elements that one can fall from one's caste. But the point is there's ways to get back to that. So it wasn't that he wasn't. He's just not functioning now. But if he changes that, he goes back to that position. But it's not that, let's say, the Shudra, then he performs those prayaschitta things, now he becomes a Brahmin. No, that's not going to work. Does that make sense? Probably couldn't do them anyway. Like things for Brahmins to prayaschitta. Walking along both the full length of the Ganges, right, on both sides of the river. And, you know, that's a prayaschitta. You know, and naturally, since you're walking, then you'll live by begging. Right? So you can start wherever, and then you just go up, down, and then come back to your place. So that'll take a little while, plenty of time. You're bathing in the Ganges, you're plenty of time to contemplate, you know, the mysteries of the universe. So by the time you get back here, purify. Shudra wouldn't be able to do that.
Time for reflection.
Yes, time for reflection. Right? But his position as a Brahmin's not lost. Right? But it just means that, but that's not theirs, that's not an option for Kshatriyas. Because they wouldn't do that. Like that. Or they might do it. Vaishyas generally would never do it. Shudras would do it. Does that make sense? Okay. In Bhagavad Gita 18:41-44, the Supreme Personality of Godhead explains, right? So he's given Manu, and now he's given Gita. Brahman, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Shudras are distinguished by their qualities of work, O chastiser of the enemy, in accordance with the modes of nature. Peacefulness, self-control, austerity, purity, tolerance, honesty, wisdom, knowledge, and religiousness. These are the qualities by which the Brahmins work. Right, so you can perform your occupation as a Brahmin if you by using these qualities. You know what I'm saying? But the idea is, it should be that you always have those qualities, because then the ashram and the varna will match. But in any case, you can only do Brahminical activities if you have this. Right? You can't sit there and offer artiks and do all that all day if you're not peaceful, or you're not sense controlled, right? Or austere, or pure, or tolerant, you know, or honest. Or have some knowledge. Religion means you wouldn't be able to do that. Right? Because, you know, if you didn't have, there'd be a lot better ways to make money. You know what I'm saying? You know, how much money you're going to get from waving incense, right? It's not going to be a whole lot. Like that. You know?
So when you're on book distribution, sometimes, it's like, people may accuse you that, you know, you're just in there for the money.
Yeah, but the point is what are they looking at? Are they looking at it from occupation, as occupation, or from you know, ashram? They have to be able to distinguish You know, it's like, why would they even say it unless they were interested in the money themselves, right? Because otherwise, if it wasn't that, oh, you're just doing that for prestige, because prestige is important.
I'm not speaking of the voter, I'm speaking of carbon.
Doing it for money, it says no. It says the point is that, one, if we're going to continue, this means these books are valuable, so we feel that they should be continued to be distributed. So to do that means what's there has to be paid for. And since you're getting the book, you should pay for the book. Right? So it's just natural. You want goods, you pay for it. So it's just like that. Even if it's a good work, someone's doing charity, someone has to pay. So let's say they have this big charity dinner, right? And everything's there is, you know, $1,000 a plate. Like that. You could say, oh, you're all into it just for the money. That's why you're charging so much money. You know, this is only worth, you know, 50 bucks. You know what I'm saying? So, but you can't say that. So welfare work means it takes money. Otherwise, how is it charity? Right? So that's there. You know, so what's the point? They're the one that benefits. But also, if they say that, check your technique. Just to make sure.
But the idea is that if it was just for the money, for the same amount of time, you know, with any other, you know, selling beer, you'd be making that, you know, like that.
Yeah. Most of the boys do hats. Hats seems to be. Hats, stickers, T-shirts. Yeah, T-shirts are really big. West Coast is really big. Like that. Big one. You have all these guys selling them, but they have one devotee who makes them. But he's the smart one. Heroism, power, determination. You know, in other words, what we're saying here is that, okay, he's not self-controlled, so he's not a Brahmin. It says that's how he has to do his occupation. But to that degree that all those qualities are there in the ashram, that's going to make it go better anyway. Because all these qualities are necessary for following Brahminical culture, which is the Vedic system. Right? So here he's talking about Varna. Right? Heroism, power, determination, resourcefulness, courage in battle, generosity, and leadership are the qualities of work for the Kshatriyas. They don't have these, they're not leaders. I'll leave you to fill in the dots. Farming, cow protection, and business are the quality of work for the Vaishyas. And for the Shudras, there is labor and service to others. Right? So this is what they do. Now notice the first ones is you require qualities to perform the activity. But the second ones, there's no mention anywhere, even a reference of quality. Right? Other than Manu mentions that lack of envy. But even if they're envious, they'd still be Shudras. They're just not good Shudras, but they'd still be Shudras. The person's a bad person, but he makes a lot of money. He's still a Vaishya. Yes?
Are there qualities that a person will be a better Vaishya by?
It means the more they have these qualities, the better they do. If they're peaceful, then how do they... You're sitting there and the stock market's going up and down and all that, but by your calculations that, you know, that's due to, you know, they just made this announcement like that by the government and this thing here, and it's just, this has come in, so therefore, once that gets over, it's going to go up. Now, can you be peaceful? Unless you're peaceful, are you going to wait? No. Unless you're self-controlled, will you wait? No. Unless there's austerity, means I could be spending that money on a limousine, but I didn't. I invested it. Right? Purity. That was a hard one. But, you know, in other words, unless there's some element, how will people trust you? Right? Honesty, how will they trust you? Wisdom. Wisdom comes from experience. Unless you're able to appreciate that in others, how will you take from others and learn from them? Like that. Knowledge. If you don't have knowledge of your field, you won't be able to do it properly. Religiousness. Otherwise... why would you apply the spiritual element to it unless you saw it as some religious element? And religion always gets good results, so your prosperity will increase also.
Remain.
You understand? So you have to apply these to any of them. you know, farm it. You put the stuff in the seeds in the ground. It's not like, okay, where is it? You know, you know. Wife asks, okay, did he bring the cauliflowers? And, you know, he says, yeah, I put the seeds in this morning. I don't know what's happening. You know, I expected by now there should be some nice big fat ones. You know, like that. But, you know, it's not going to, right? Snap and hold your hands. Oh, fold your hands. Okay. Okay, so then we'll continue. Today's Thursday, right? Tomorrow.
Om Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare.
Just a side note. This chapter is disgusting. I mean, this point, the sutra is discussing how the devotee on the spontaneous platform is beyond the rules and regulations, right? How much did we have to discuss that part? But as soon as we hit Varnashram, then all the questions and everything, you know, does that make sense? In other words, rules and regulations are for us. Right? Because that's where you know, everything, all the questions come. Is that, so that's why we're putting this off till 1 year later.